We're with Professor Ron Mallett. Ron, what kind of device will get you back into time?
Well, as I said, it's going to be based on gravity. And as I said, a natural time machine is based, one of the natural ones that in our universe is based on a black hole. Because, as I mentioned, according to Einstein's general theory of relativity, gravity can affect time. And the stronger gravity is, the more time will slow down. So this means that if you get close to a black hole, which has the ultimate gravitational field that prevents light from escaping, as you get closer and closer and closer to the black hole, time would slow down for you. You wouldn't notice it slowing down as you're getting close, but people who were watching you as you get close to the black hole would see your clock slow down. And as I mentioned earlier, by clock, I'm talking about any rhythm-keeping mechanism, mm-hmm. and that means your heart rate. They would actually see that slow down, so they would actually see you age less. So as you're going closer to the black hole, decades could be passing for everyone else who was not near the black hole, but hours could only be passing for you. And as long as you didn't go into the black hole, just went close to it, if you came back away from the black hole, then you might, as I said, only be hours older, but decades would have passed. And that, in fact, means that a black hole actually acts as a natural time machine. My work, of course, I wanted to have something that you could do in the laboratory and some sort of mechanism that you could control. And the key was Einstein's theory, once again, but using the aspect of it that I mentioned, that light can create gravity. And as I said, now you can actually see the root of my breakthrough. Okay?
All right.
Follow me. That is to say, if gravity can affect time and light can create gravity, then light can what? Light can affect time.
Right.
So my breakthrough was to realize that by manipulating light, I could actually manipulate time. And we have, in our time, one of the most amazing light sources that we can manipulate, and that's a laser. Okay, and it turns out that by using laser light, I was able to show that it's possible to control time in such a way that not only could we use time to go into the future, but we could actually use light to control time so that we can go back into the past. And this going into the future just has to do with the fact that the intensity of the light will create, the stronger the light is, the more gravity there'll be that will actually slow time down. That would allow you to go to the future. In order to go back into the past, you have to do something a little bit more than just simply use the intensity of light. You actually have to change the configuration of light. And what I mean by that is the fact that you actually have to cause light to move around in a loop. And there's a number of different ways that you can do that. That is to say that you can bounce light off of mirrors. You can send light through special crystals. You can have optical fibers that are part of our communication system. You could put a fiber optic in a loop. You can have the loop light go into a loop. So there's a number of different ways you can get light to move around in a loop. But it turns out that getting light to move around into a loop can actually cause time to go move around in a loop.
Is time, Ron, much like a tape recorder or a video recorder, where every event that's been done is just still out there?
Well, not quite. I mean, the thing is that in a sense, for example, when you're traveling into the future really doesn't happen. What happens is that because of the fact that you're traveling so fast, you disconnect from everyone else who's in a normal flow of things. And it's like you are moving downstream so that you reconnect with what's happening in the future. And likewise, when you're going into the past, the thing is that you need something that separates, that actually you, in a way, if you want to use the analogy of a recorder, you actually have to have something that sort of isolates the way in which time is flowing so that you can go back. So that is what traveling back in time would do. It would actually allow you to, in a sense, disconnect yourself from the normal flow so that you could go back along the back of the stream into the past. There's actually an analogy to think about how one can actually twist time. and space, because you have to do both. In order to travel back into the past, you actually have to twist both space and time. In Einstein's theory, you can't have one without the other. The two have to happen together. And the analogy that I like to think of is, remember I was saying that you think of gravity is actually kind of like a medium. And if you think of, well, let's use a simple example, a cup of coffee, okay? And think of the coffee in the cup as being like empty space, okay? Okay. So you just have a cup of coffee in front of you, and think of that coffee as being like empty space. And then think of your spoon, take a spoon, and think of that spoon as being like a circulating light beam, okay? So what happens if I take the spoon and stir the coffee? The coffee starts swirling around, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's what the circulating light beam will do. That is to say, if you take a laser beam and cause a laser beam to move around in a loop, it will actually cause a twisting of that space. Now, you might say, well, I can't see it because, you know, I'm twisting empty space. But let's go back to the coffee. Suppose you take a sugar cube and drop it into the coffee. Then as you use the spoon to stir the coffee is going to start dragging the sugar cube around, right? So you could know that the motion of the, you could actually see the motion of the coffee by just looking at the sugar cube that's being dragged around. Well, in the case of the empty space, suppose you put a little particle, subatomic particle like a neutron into the space. Then as you take the spoon and stir the empty space, even though you can't see the space moving, the space will drag the neutron around. So by having the circulating light beam and looking in the region that the light beam is circulating, it will actually stir the space, and the space will drag the neutron around. So you'll see the neutron sort of all of a sudden start, you know, dragging around. So you'll know that the empty space is being twisted. Now, in Einstein's theory, once again, space and time are linked to each other. That's why it's called space-time. And so whatever you do to space also happens to time. If you bend space, you bend time, and that slows time down. If you twist space, then eventually, if the twisting is strong enough, you can actually twist time. Normally, even though we're unconscious of it, all of us are moving along a timeline from the past to the present to the future. We're just moving along this straight line of time. But if I twist space, I can twist this line of time into a loop. In a sense, you might think I could actually connect the past to the future. I could actually twist time into a loop so that if I twist time, I could actually move from the past to the present to the future, but I've made time into a loop, so I could go from the future back into the past.
If you were going to go back to see your father, which is your quest, how would you be able to time it to that time period you want to go back to?
That's the key. I would have to, and that's actually part of the limitation of the trying to do it this particular way, too, because when you turn the machine on, that's when it actually, in a sense, starts. Suppose I have the device and I turn it on today. Then time starts getting twisted, okay, beginning today.
Right.
And let's suppose that I leave the device on for 10 years, and I have to leave it on for 10 years. 10 years from now, someone could travel back 2 years, 5 years, 7 years, all the way back up to the time the device was turned on. They could go, they could stop at any one of those points by going away from the light beam, but they can't go earlier than when the device was on. So I could actually calculate 10 years from now, I could actually calculate how I want to travel along these loops in time.
Would you see the time changing right in front of your eyes, like the movie, the time travel,
well,
time machine?
What it would be to you is would be as though you were moving around in space. Okay, you wouldn't. It would be the people who were outside would actually see you just sort of disappearing as you went into the past.
Okay,
and for you, it would appear as though you were moving around in space. And you would actually calculate how far you've moved around in space, and that would actually be equivalent to how far you've moved back into time.
I mean, to find your father, would you have to physically set up shop by your old house, for example? Would you have to be in that vicinity?
No, I mean, I could be anywhere, but I would just have to travel back to that point. I mean, that is to say that where you turn on the machine, it doesn't matter. You, when you go, get back to the past, then you can just travel in ordinary space to get back. I mean, in other words, the laboratory could be happening at the University of Connecticut, for example, that I could do it. But then I would have to travel back. Once I get to the time that I want, then I would have to go by whatever means.
Would this be a physical transformation on your behalf, or would it be in your mind?
No, it would be physical. It would actually be, you would actually be traveling back to the past, to the real past. Now, here's the thing. You would have a memory of what the future is like, but once you've traveled back into the past, by the very point in which you get back to the past, you will have altered the possible future. So you would have almost sort of a schizophrenic sense of things, because you would have a memory of things that might not happen because you have altered the past. And so even though, you know, you would tell people, well, this is going to happen or that's going to happen, that may not happen, because once you've come back to the past and altered the past, even just the slightest thing that you do can send a ripple effect.
Even if you might not have been involved in that event?
Even if you might not have been involved, just your...
I mean, like the Kennedy assassination. Let's say you go back to 1962. He's assassinated in 63, and you go back and start telling people this. What could happen?
Well, what could happen is that the rumor could get around somehow.
Okay.
And the rumor could affect things in some way that you can't even begin to anticipate. And that might just cause the slightest change could lead to a ripple effect that would affect, when whatever theory that one believes happened with the Kennedy assassination,
right.
That could affect that scenario in subtle ways, which you can't even begin to anticipate.
I mean, you know, Kennedy might hear the rumor and say, I'm not going to Dallas today.
Well, that, or it could just affect the speed of the vehicle. I mean, you know, it could affect people in the crowd. I mean, it could affect things that could affect ultimately his being there. Just someone could actually be in the path of the bullet that was meant for him. You know, it's things that we can't even anticipate. As I said, this is called the butterfly effect, where some little thing. One of my favorite stories is the story by Ray Bradbury, A Sound of Thunder, mm-hmm. in which they just step on a butterfly in the past, and it affects that whole chain of events
yeah.
that alters the entire future. And that is what can happen. So now, in your mind, you have this notion of what the future looks like. However, because you've altered the future, people would think you're crazy. You know, and you might think that you might be able to get away with it. Well, now I can invent things that are going to change.
Right. Or I'm buying Apple stock or something.
Right. But you don't know what that is going to do. You may not. You may find that you've put yourself into a situation in which you've made your life a mess. Or you may have lead to a better future. But as I said, there's no way to anticipate what's going to happen when you arrive in the past and try to alter the past.
Is it possible, Ron, that future time travelers, I mean, if time traveling is going to be possible to the extent that you're talking about, is it possible that future time travelers from the year 2036, 3000, whatever, have come back and they might be here right now?
Only if the time machine has been running since now. You see, part of the problem is that it's the time machine that creates the effect. And so if I turn the device on today, it starts today. And as I said, I could leave it on for till, let's say, 2032.
All right.
Then time travelers from 2032 could, in fact, travel back to 2020, 2019, all the way back up, but they couldn't go past 2011.
Okay, so how then can you go back to see your father at that point?
I can't by using terrestrial mechanism.
You can't.
I can't. I mean, in other words, that's where the difference between a real device. And it doesn't matter. I mean, as I said, it doesn't matter how I've created it. Even if you do try to use other mechanisms, and there are other approaches that people have thought about in terms of wormholes and other things like that, you could only go back to the point at which the wormhole was formed.
So we can't go back and see Christ. We can't go back and see...
Not by using a terrestrial mechanism. I notice I keep on using the phrase terrestrial mechanism.
Right, right.
The reason why I say that is important is that one of the other major breakthroughs that's happened in science, and this has happened in the since the 90s, has been the discovery of what are known as extrasolar planets. Now, this is a very, very important development. This is independent of sort of the UFO thing, because what it's told us is the fact that an extrasolar planet means that these are planets that are orbiting stars that are nearly like our sun, and these planets are almost like our planet. They're not there yet, but they're almost like it. And we found over 200 of these in the neighborhood of our galaxy, just in our neighborhood here. And the thing is that this means that eventually, and in fact, just it was not even a year ago, what was discovered was called the Goldilocks planet. And of course, what they mean by that is just what the analogy is saying. That is to say that they think that astrophysicists think they have discovered a system that is almost just right. That is to say that it's not too big, it's not too small, it's almost like our Earth going around our sun. And on that type of a planet, life would exist. What this means is that it's now an accepted fact in the astrophysical community that our universe is probably teeming with life. Because if we found that many in the neighborhood of our galaxy, when you think of the billions of galaxies, that means that the universe is probably teeming with life. This means that there's probably civilizations out there that are more primitive than us, but there's certainly probably civilizations out there that are more advanced than us. And if those civilizations have discovered time travel, let's say 10,000 years ago, eventually when we encounter them, and I do believe that we will eventually encounter them, then we could use their time machine to travel back to our distant past. So it means that our distant past isn't forever locked from us. We could actually use their time machine. Now, their time machine would still have the same limitation. They could only go back 10,000 years. But using their machine, we could go back and visit the ancient past. We could eventually see ancient Egypt and ancient Rome, visit the time of Christ. So that is a possibility, and I think it's a real possibility.
Could you bring things back with you as you go? Could you bring a video camera back?
Oh, yes. I mean, you could bring whatever it is that you want. As I said, once again, there's that possibility of you altering the past in unanticipated ways. But yes, you could go back and record the past and come back to the future showing what it is that you found.
So you could come back to your original time period?
You could come back to a time period, whether it will be your original time period. Because remember, George, what I said, once you go back into the past, and if you alter something, you bump accidentally,
that's right. Okay.
Or whatever, that you can come back to the present, but the present you come back to would may not be the present that you would have lived.
God forbid if you came back and accidentally ran over your little father who was 10 in a car, that could affect you too. I want to ask you about that when we come back. Now, the grandfather paradox is this. Suppose a man travels back into time, kills his biological grandfather before the latter met the traveler's grandmother. As a result, one of the traveler's parents would never have been conceived, and this would imply that he could not have traveled back into time after all, which then means that the grandfather would still be alive, and the traveler would have been conceived, allowing him to travel back into time and kill his grandfather. Sounds confusing, Ron. What does it all mean?
Well, the thing is that, in fact, the grandfather paradox is one of the reasons why people have, wondered whether possibility of time travel into the past is possible. There's no paradox when you're traveling into the future, but there is a paradox when you travel back into the past. The thing is that there's actually two very general schools of thought about this. One of them has to do with the fact that when you travel back into the past, it's going to sound strange, but I'm generalizing the statement, but the universe, in a sense, conspires to keep things the way that they are. That is to say, for example, you go back into the past and you try to shoot your grandfather. The gun misfires. You can't do it. In other words, no matter what you try to do in the past, nature will act in such a way that it will prevent you from doing that. There's a classical version of that, and there's now more recently a quantum version of that that people have talked about, where you go back and the probability of events is such that it's more probable for things to have happened in such a way that they lead to the future that we see, which means that you can't alter the past, even if you can travel to the past, but you can't alter the past that you travel to. That's the one school of thought. The other school of thought says that, and it's also based on quantum theory, is the fact that you can, in fact, travel back into the past. But when you arrive in the past, you arrive in the past of a parallel universe. I should mention that this notion of parallel universes, even though it sounds like science fiction, is really anchored in the solid science of quantum mechanics, which talks about the fact that our universe may only be one of many parallel universes.
Identical, almost?
Almost identical, and that these universes are happening essentially all the time. I mean, one example that I usually like to use is that depending on what you decided you wanted to have for lunch today, let's say I use a simple example of a fish sandwich or a cheeseburger, and at the instant that you have chosen, let's say, the cheeseburger, then there is a George Norrie in a parallel universe who's chosen the fish sandwich. They are completely independent of each other. But they have, and so for every choice that you can make, there's going to be another choice. And this doesn't have to do with human consciousness. That is to say that if an electron has a possibility of going along two different paths, then the universe will actually split. And what I'm saying, this is actually two separate universes. The electron will be traveling along one path in one universe and along the other path in another universe. And these multiple universes are not happening in an ordinary space. The space is actually called a superspace. It's sort of a general space in which all of these different universes are occupied. And the thing is that what this leads to is if you travel back into the past, you do arrive in the past, but the past you arrive in is not the past that you came from. That is to say, as soon as you arrive in the past, there's a split of the universe. The original universe you came from is unaffected. And it leads to your grandparents meeting each other, your parents. But you arrive in this parallel universe. And in this parallel universe, you could do something as strange or perverse as preventing your harming one of your grandparents. I always like to think of it as preventing one of them from
right, exactly. You know? I never liked that paradox when they talked about stuff like that.
I never liked the more violent form of
go back and kill your grandparents. No.
You can prevent your grandparents from meeting each other. And then you will just find yourself in a very weird universe in which you are in that universe, but you were never born in that universe. And if you try to go back to the future, you would be arriving in the future of the parallel universe. So you can never get home again. You would always, and if you try to go back into the past again, you would arrive in the past of another parallel universe. So time travel essentially would be equivalent to parallel universe hopping. You would go from one to the other, but they would look so identical that it would look to you as though you were in the same universe. So you could actually, if you decided to go back to save someone, you would be sacrificing your life in your original universe. But you could save the life of a person in a parallel universe.
Have you started to build your time machine with the lasers?
Well, only in a demonstration sense to show how the principle will work, but not the hardware of it. One of the things that people have a difficult time, and it's one of the things it's funny too, because I love science fiction movies, I should say, and one of my favorite is Back to the Future.
Love it. Me too. I also liked, of course, the original Time Machine, and then Somewhere in Time was a classic.
Oh, that's a beautiful classic.
Yeah.
And the thing is that, but all of these movies, what they don't emphasize is the cost that would be necessary for real development. In real science, it's very, very expensive. I just point to the Large Hadron Collider.
At CERN, billions of dollars, right?
Billions of dollars. And even the simplest scientific experiments cost millions of dollars. The thing that we have to do to establish the concept is to show that a circulating beam of light can actually twist space. That's the first step. We have to show that space can be twisted by a circulating beam of light. This leads to a concept that's called frame dragging. That's the technical name for it, incidentally. That once you twist space, you put something in that space, and it would get dragged around. And to show that a circulating light beam would do that has not been done yet. There's actually been experiments that have been successfully shown that the rotating Earth can actually twist space. It's called Gravity Probe B. But to show that light can do it has not been done. But just the startup cost for that is $250,000. Now, that sounds like a lot, but that's really, for scientific experiments, that's not a lot. And the stage that we're at right now is actually a fundraising stage to try to acquire that necessarily funding. And I've been fortunate that I have a number of people that are helping me. Incidentally, my alma mater has Penn State, is where I got my PhD.
Mm-hmm.
The Penn State Electro-Optics Center, some of the researchers there became interested in my work, and they've been trying to help me develop getting the funding to do the experiments. But we still have to acquire to do that. Also, at the University of Connecticut, they have an account that's actually set up for me. The nice thing about that account is the fact that it's the funds come to the University of Connecticut Foundation, and any contributions are actually tax deductible. The funds come to them, and then they're dispersed to us. But once again, we're still far from having that $250,000 startup that we need. So that's where we're at right now with it. I'm still developing the theoretical side of this. I have graduate students that are working with me to help me develop more sophisticated ways of using the laser, but those are still theoretical studies. So that's where we are with that. But once again, it's literally not a matter of theory. It's a matter of money. And eventually we'll get it, but we're still a long way away from it just simply because of that.
Could there be some abuses with time traveling, Ron?
Yes. As a matter of fact, that's one of the other things that it's important for people to realize.
Like military applications?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the reasons why I wrote my book, Time Traveler, was not only to tell people about my journey, but to tell people about the real possibility of time travel, because as citizens, technology is accelerating at an incredible pace, and things that people thought were science fiction are overtaking us so rapidly. And the thing is that when time travel happens, and it will happen, we have to be aware of it as citizens because it's going to have to be regulated. Another one of my favorite time travel movies is Time Cop. It's with Claude Van Damme, and the concept behind it is I liked, was the fact that in order to control abuses of time, they actually had to develop a temporal enforcement agency. That is to say, it's something like a combination of the FBI and Interpol, where they actually have people who investigate the fact that there might be people who are utilizing time travel for the wrong means, and they found a way to prevent that. So that's something that we have to be conscious of. Now, time travel is going to be an expensive proposition, as I've alluded to. Just the startup cost of what we're talking about, just to show the twisting of space, that's where $250,000 is. To go to the next level of twisting time is going to cost millions more. So, time machines are not something that you're going to be able to pick up at Walmart.
How fast could we go and develop a good time machine, one that will do these things you've talked about, if the government got behind you and pumped in some big money?
Right. If the government got behind, for example, if we were able to get let's suppose we were able to get all the funding that we needed, okay, not just simply the $250,000 for the startup funds, then it would probably be 10 years altogether. First, because it's going to take about 4 or 5 years to just show this twisting of space. But then what we learn from how to twist space will teach us how to twist time. And that's hard to predict, because once you make that breakthrough, then the pace of things accelerate. But I anticipate that once we can actually show that we can twist space, it'll probably be another 5 years beyond that we can show that we can twist time by what we've learned from twisting space. And so if we had all the funding that we need, I think we could probably have a device. It wouldn't send people back, and I should emphasize that. That's one of the things that's important, is that we're not trying to send people back. What we're trying to show is that we can send information back. And in some ways, you know, since this is the information age, it's more important to send information back than it is to send people back. And people have asked me, well, besides, you know, your interest in trying to see your father again, what else would a time machine be useful for? Well, to me, one of the most important uses of it would be as an early warning device. I mean, imagine if we had a way of, for example, warning ourselves. You know, you're out in California, or warning ourselves of massive earthquakes,
right,
or tsunamis, or hurricanes, the thousands of lives that we could save by that kind of information. So to me, that's one of the most important things for me, is to try to develop an early warning device that could help humanity and could help, you know, help us to survive.
Well, you know what? It's possible. It's going to happen one day. I would love it in our lifetime, Ron. What do you think?
I think that it will happen in our lifetime, but once again, we have to, you know, and this is, it's kind of a, it's unfortunate, but we seem to be stimulating, like we, I'm talking about the country, when we have an outside pressure. I mean, the simplest example, of course, is Sputnik. It was when we had Sputnik that we decided to, you know, get our act together and pull it together. And, of course, when we as a country, as a nation, when we decide we're going to do something, we do it. And we do it right, and we do it fast, because we were the ones who got to the moon first. But we had to have the outside pressure of communist Russia in order to stimulate us to do that. And it's unfortunate, because we should be able to realize that this is important without that stimulation. Moreover, there's other countries that can develop this technology independent of us, and we have no idea what sort of projects that they might be trying to develop. And that would be unfortunate that some other country would develop this before we do. And once again, this sort of thing can happen for me. And I don't know whether a lot of people realize a lot of the history of the rocket program. You know, it's we could have been where we were much, much earlier if we had developed rocketry in this country. You know, there was a man named Robert Goddard, an American,
sure,
who actually was, in a sense, the father of rocketry in this country in the 20s. And the thing is that he got some funding, but not the sort of funding that he needed, because it wasn't considered by the government to be particularly important what he was doing. It was just sort of, you know, interesting academic exercise. Unfortunately for us, there were a group of teenagers, essentially, you know, young people in Germany who, in fact, really appreciated Goddard's work. And they studied it, and they made use of it, and they developed rocket clubs to develop these ideas. And guess who was one of the members of these rocket clubs who was inspired by Robert Goddard's work? Wannner von Braun.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The thing is that eventually we brought him over here after the Second World War, where we could have had the technology without him. If we had, you know, given Goddard the funding that he needed and allowed him to follow through. And I think that, unfortunately, this could happen with time travel. You know, the basis of it is there, and it needs to be explored, but it needs to be funded. And I think that it will happen. But as I said, I would like it to happen in this country.
So let's look at all the possibilities here. What about limitations? What can go wrong?
Well, what can go wrong is, just as in any new technology, I mean, there's When you say go wrong, I mean, there's it may cost us much more than we think, you know, which is the problem. But I don't see, you know, and as I said, the only other downsides are the control of the device, because once again, this is something that once the technology comes, it's going to be expensive, so it's not going to be something that's going to be personal use, but we're going to have to control how the government utilizes it. But I don't see anything that can go wrong, only insofar as the fact that that different countries with competing interests could utilize the technology in ways that we might not like. That is a problem, I think.
What's new with the Time Traveler book? Still available?
My book?
Yes.
Time Traveler is very much available. And the thing is that it's doing extremely well. In fact, I should mention that one of the things that I'm very, very pleased and proud of is that the book has been translated into a number of languages. It's been translated into Chinese, it's been translated into Korean, it's been translated just most recently into Japanese. And in fact, it was kind of an irony there, because I actually have on my Facebook page a number of people from these countries as well, and I also mentioned the fact that it would have been wonderful if we had had this early warning system to have let them know about the disaster that recently happened in Japan. And I've actually had a nice response from people in Japan about that. But one of the other things that I've been very proud of is that the gifted filmmaker and director Spike Lee has become interested in my book, Time Traveler, and has he wants to develop it into a feature film. And this would be a regular feature film, just like Beautiful Mind. That is to say, it would have major actors who would play the role of me and play the role of my father. And this is something that I'm very excited about. The script has just been finished just this past November, and Spike's agents are now taking it around to the studios and various actors. I can't mention who these actors might be, but the thing is that I think it will be very exciting. And for me, of course, one of the most exciting things is not the actor who would play me, but the actor who would play my father, because it would be as though Spike is bringing him back to life and to see him on the silver screen. So that is really one of the most exciting developments about the book. And the book has stimulated, that's the other thing that I've been very proud of with the book. The book has been actually adopted by many high schools and middle schools. It's gotten kids excited. And see, for me, this is the equivalent of what happened with Goddard, getting the kids in this country and other countries excited about rocketry, because that is where it's going to happen with the younger generation. When I go into the high schools and I'm talking about these ideas, or into the middle schools, the kids' eyes light up, because for them, space travel is like it's something that's happening to others.
No. It's exciting, Ron. Ron, we've got a final hour to go with you. We're going to take some phone calls when we come right back.